Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week, special guest, Shahara Ghaznavi. We discuss the amazing, the talented, the werewolf, not a swearwolf, Rhys Darby and his album and one-man show, Mystic Time Bird.
Everyone, it's your host Matt. So this is going to be a fun episode. I actually got to see this performance live when it was in Toronto. I am joined by my friend, my colleague on Detecting the Marvelous, and who's that? The incredibly talented writer, performer, stand-up comedian, actor, thespian. Shahara Ghaznavi is a great conversation with this terrific young talent, and it was a fun time. We talked about the interesting and honestly heart-wrenching one-man show, Mystic Time Bird, by Rhys Darby. You may know Rhys from Flight of the Conchords, What We Do in the Shadows, where he played a werewolf, or most likely his hit show, Our Flag Means Death. You'll notice that a lot of these are collaborations with Tika Waititi. He is a New Zealander and an interesting fellow, big cryptozoology fan, if you ever want to check out an interesting podcast. And so that's it. Thanks for tuning in, and buckle up for Comedy Album Book Club.
You were a good mimic because you were a lyrebird.
Oh, a lyrebird. What's so weird about that?
Well, my love, unfortunately it means that you were Australian.
Well, that was weird.
Hello and welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I am joined by my friend and fellow podcast partner on Detecting the Marvelous and Who's That, Shara Ghaznavi. Shara, thanks for joining me today. How have you been doing?
Thank you so much, Matt. I'm super, super excited. I feel like I'm getting like my Avengers Infinity Stones of like you and your podcast. Do you mind if I ask, how many do you have? Is it four that you have?
I have four. That's one incredible. I'm producer on, and I'm just, and that eventually became sort of like sub-hosting. Like I'm a host, but I'm like the producer. Is, you know, I'm the Matt Gorley of Toronto. You know,
you
like he
I
produces
ask,
all of that.
Is it a wine podcast? Like we talk
no,
about wine?
It's a food podcast. So
oh, I see.
Yeah, but it's silly food questions. Like, is a burger a sandwich?
Oh my goodness.
No, cone or cup.
No.
So that kind of stuff. So yeah, if when we do another season, I will be sure to like add you to the list of people I recommend as a guest.
Why? Thank you. I used to go to McMaster. Yeah. I go to York University now. Like I'm studying theater, getting my BFA at York University for theater and playwriting. But I used to go to McMaster University and it was over Zoom that first year. Because of the pandemic and like icebreaker questions. But they weren't icebreaker questions. They were brain breaker questions because it would be like, is coffee soup? And I'm like, why would you ever consider coffee to be soup? And to this day, I mean, those questions still haunt me more than any moral question I've ever had to encounter in my life, I think.
Because they're like, you think, oh, this is easy. But then you really start to like deconstruct these questions. And it's like, oh, no, they're more complex than I realized. But yeah, though we have a fun time. It's my friend Kelly Zimnikas, Mary Kennedy and Carrie Haim.
Wow.
They're just super funny people. And I when I brought back this podcast, I was like, I want to capture some of that energy, which is much more just there's questions, but it's more just like chatting. And that's sort of like the vibe that I was hoping to go for here is like recapture some of that. Because if you go back and listen to the older episodes, like that I ran for like a few years, like it started with my friend Jason and we did these big panel shows and is like you know, history and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I tag history at the top, but you know, the main core of this is just the conversations with fellow lovers of comedy.
Wow. I really do appreciate you bringing me on for this one though. Like I'm lucky enough to get to work with you on Who's That and Detecting the Marvelous. And I have such a joy doing that with you and with Dan and I just can't wait to talk about comedy and this one and to just be a guest and to let you take the reins and to have you be the boss. And that's
couldn't ask for a better guest. So you suggested Mystic Mindbird, Rhys Darby's 2021 album.
I think it's Mystic Timebird.
Mystic Timebird. Timebird. I am. Yes. Mystic Time. Okay, I'm going to do that again.
I'm going to take the reins and host the podcast now. Yeah, Thank you for your attempt. Appreciate you trying.
I gave it a good go. I'm old. Time to hand the baton. But yes, Mystic Timebird from 2021, which he'd actually been touring for a while. When you suggested this, it was like, this seems familiar. Like I saw him at Just for Laughs in 2017. That was right after he filmed Jumanji.
Wow.
And I was like, man, why does that sound familiar? Then I listened to the album. I'm like, because I saw this, because this is the show that he did. Just for Laughs or JFL 42 back then.
Yeah. I cannot believe you got to see that in person. Like, and it is my goal to see Rhys Darby perform in person. I've never like he. I think that he's one of those people that are born to perform. Like, there's nothing else I could see him doing.
Yeah.
But I mean, even though he was a military man, he's done a lot in his lifetime. But he was meant for the stage.
Yeah, and he embraces silly. In a way it's still silly, but it doesn't feel like you do see some people do silly stuff and it's just like, oh, that's just dumb. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel diminishing when he's in like,
yeah.
So like this album, you know, it's really much, it's kind of like, I'm going to tie it back to another, well, an Australian, which he would resent, but Hannah Gadsby.
Oh, how dare you? No, Hannah Gadsby.
Yeah, like, Australians, how did you get in here? It's funny, too, because I went on a trip to the UK, and we had a New Zealander who was the owner of the Airbnb that we stayed in, and he explained how to do the uptalk, you know, that they all do, you know, the Australian accent's very different, but the New Zealand accent,
yeah, New Zealand,
you know, everything ends like a question, you know, you really hear that in Rees.
Oh, you totally do. And like, I think it's every E, Beth, it would say Beth, like, it's good to get to meet you. Eggs, like, you know, I'm making eggs for breakfast or whatever. I don't know. I love doing. Okay, that was really bad because I was on the spot, and but I love doing those accents for sure.
I think that was a pretty good New Zealander. Yeah, I can't do accents for crap. I can do a passable Werner Herzog, not even a passable German, a passable Werner Herzog, only because he's so weird.
Are you allowed to enlighten me? Is that something we can do?
Okay. Let me get into the moment here. Like Werner Herzog's a bit of a feat. You shall hear the screams that people call silence and wonder, what is humanity? So that's just because it's like a Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken isn't. I can't do a Christopher Walken.
I can do a Christopher Walken spooky. That's all I can do.
Spooky, yeah. Spooky. Like I can do like words, but not like a sentence as Christopher Walken because there's just so much going on there.
Oh yeah.
Werner Herzog is like that though, where it's not a German accent; it's a Werner Herzog accent. And it's just like yes, this is a man who carried a boat across a mountain to make a movie. But going back to that the comparison that we kind of I went off at a tangent on, it's stealth serious. Like the first half of the Hannah Gadsby special that really broke her, it feels like a normal comedy special until she like hits the gear shift. And I think just due to the nature of Rees, it's a very different structure. It's not like a break, but like he reveals fairly early, like, you know, this is more of like a confessional coming to accounts with his grief, which is like really interesting. Like so why did you choose this album? Like what inspired you to discuss this? Well,
that's a really good question. Before you asked me, I hadn't listened to or gotten the chance to watch Mystic Time Bird, but I've heard so much about it, and I am such a fan of Rees's work. I mean, I've like he has a podcast called Cryptid Factor where he talks with Dan Schreiber and this guy named Buttons, I think his name is Leon, about just like the weird like supernatural like semi-natural cryptid like news in the world, like Bigfoots and Sasquatches and I love his character work from that. I was introduced to him technically from Our Flag Means Death, where he plays Steed Bonnet, which I think like he was meant to play. I can't imagine anybody else in that role. He's fantastic. But as I was watching that, I was like, this guy seems very familiar, and it's because he was from Jumanji. And he was very even though he played like an NPC, like welcome to Jumanji, like that was his character, but it was so memorable. And then from that I kind of went on like the Rees Darby like rabbit hole, and I've been like following his work and all the stand-up he does and all the touring he does, and he like incredible comedian, incredible physical comedian, and like
yes.
I was like, you have to make sure that you watch some of the clips from this as well, because like his physical comedy is so specific. His vocal work is insane. Like he does a lot of like voice work, and it's the kind of thing that number one, like I wonder if I even have the ability. Like I love doing voices, but his is so specific, and I'm glad that nobody. And maybe he's been called like maybe he's been told like, oh, don't make noises, oh blah, blah. But I'm glad that he didn't listen to those people, because he relishes and just the ability to go really weird places with his mouth, basically with the voices he could do, and it's very I look up to him so much. That's why I wanted to
I think that's awesome. Like did you ever watch the original What We Do in the Shadows?
I've seen the new one, and I've seen clips of the old one, and I still need to. He plays the werewolf guy.
Yeah, werewolves, yeah. Not swearwolves.
Werewolves, like, not werewolves.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just like that cadre of like Taika Waititi and the guys from the Flight of the Conchords, and like that comedy core that came out of New Zealand at that time are just like so awesome. I mean,
brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those things where it's like it just like showed us it really opens up, like, you know, in the news today, like recently the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival filed for bankruptcy protection.
No, actually.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, so Toronto just got canceled yesterday. No. Montreal was canceled last week. I won't get into the politics there. We can talk about that offline. But it just really highlights how amazing comedy voices from around the world outside of like the US are, and these venues like Just for Laughs, where you could get these voices from other places on these big stages, is, you know, it's really wild and important and amazing to see these things. Like, that's one of the things I loved about Zoom comedy. I like saw comedians from like Kuala Lumpur and Germany and Japan, and they're funny as anybody else I've seen, you know, funnier than a lot of American comics that I've seen. But everybody's America. I find a lot of commonality between Canadian humor and New Zealand humor.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think it's that like colonial component of our culture, like where there's this weird love hate relationship with the Britishness of parts of our culture. So there's this like, he had a TV. Did you ever see his TV show Tall Poppies?
No, I've never heard of it. That's no. Yeah.
Check it out in sources that you know about that I will not name on the podcast. But it's basically him just doing different characters. And there's a saying in New Zealand and around the world, like a tall poppy gets cut down.
Okay.
And that's just the premise. Like, you know, if you get too prideful, you get knocked down. And it's not really in America. It doesn't really happen in America, but in Canada and New Zealand, I feel that's very much a mentality that we have. And it's, but yeah, so he does a lot of character work on that, very silly characters, different characters every episode. So definitely worth checking out. But yeah, the like you mentioned, his physical comedy, so good. Like,
isn't
that robot
the one
scene?
Who was like leggy blonde. Okay, well, yes. Okay,
yeah, leggy blonde. Yeah.
Yeah, leggy blonde is something. He was like, when I was a kid, and like, I've seen clips of him as like a teenager, and he was like this tall, scrawny, skinny guy, and he would like just like flail his legs all over the place and like tight. And that's kind of, I was like, that's fantastic. Like, of course.
And his robot bit. In the
cowboy
album,
cowboy robot, yeah.
Just watching him do that across the state, because he did that across. Uh-huh. And this was I'm trying to remember the name of the venue. They don't use it as much now. Queen Elizabeth Theater down in the CNE.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is a wide stage, like a big flipping stage, like an unbearably big stage for comedy. And he just like, but crossed it doing the robot walk, and it was delightful.
It's the specificity in his movements tied to his voice, like the effects he's able to do, like that is a robot, like I don't know, that's just a robot voice. And yeah. And it's so incredible. And also, like, and we recently just saw Alex Edelman together, like when I kind of have a thing for like when comedians don't use like a mic. Obviously I use a mic in my stand-up and whatever, but because when you have the mic attached to your head, you have your body, like you kind of gain access to your body again. And Reese is one of those people. It's like the first time that I saw somebody do stand-up but it wasn't with a mic in hand, and what that afforded him as a physical performer. And I was like, yeah, there's no way that Reese could perform like all that he does without like, without having access to his arms and his legs and full range of motion and being able to fill a like larger than life stage, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it kind of reminds me of like Buster Keaton and like Three Stooges, all those old vaudeville acts where you developed, that's where slapstick comedy was born.
Yes.
And you get that physicality. And that's, I mean, I love modern stand up. I mean, I wouldn't have a podcast about it and do it and stuff if I didn't love it.
Same here.
And yeah, and I mean, I could not do that kind of physical comedy because I am old and broken. But
you're fine. Oh my goodness.
I woke up, I went to bed, I dreamt I took an arrow to the knee, and I woke up with like a knee that was in severe pain the next morning. Oh. My body's falling apart at this point. I put on a good facade. Don't get me wrong. I realized, like, I did a show a couple of weeks ago. And I was working a bit about being 49, and there was an audible gasp of disbelief from the audience. I was like, that fills my heart with joy.
Because you don't look 49. I'm like, I honestly, I would pin you at like 30s. I'd say you're my age if I could, actually. No.
Well, that is very kind. 30s, I believe. Now I think you're just trying to flatter me. But yeah, like it's I wish I could do that kind of like pratfall physical stuff that he does, even just like silly dancing and stuff like that. I wish I could do that. I mean, I can, but I just have to be moderate in my move set. But yeah, and it's like, it's silly. This album is silly, but it's intensely personal. Like,
yeah.
Like even when he's talking like Barbie Darby's Darby Barbie, you know, like these are really intense personal feelings that he's sharing. But by using this context, so when I saw that there was like a light off stage that he would talk to, which was the shaman in the tree.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you created that division. It felt more natural, the break. It wasn't just him like turning one way and doing a different voice. It's pre-recorded. And there was like a, you don't get that intimacy. There's intimacy in this silliness. And like, how do you like, I mean, we both do a very different style from Reese. But how do you incorporate some of these sort of like the silliness and the intimacy and all of these components into what you do?
It's a good question.
Performer, and like, not just necessarily in stand-up, but I mean, you're on TV, you're on the stage, you know, like these, you know, performance in general kind of thing.
Yeah. I appreciate you asking me that. And like, maybe it's because I'm 21. But maybe because I'm 21, like part of me is still trying to figure out like what that is. And like, have you found that in my work that I'm able, like that I have an ability to do that? Cause part of me is like, oh shit. Like, do I have that? There's so much about myself that I'm trying to figure out in terms of like, I don't even know if I could put words to it at the point that I'm at. Like, I know I love comedy and sketch and sorry, I asked you a question and then talked.
No, I've done the same thing, so hey, fair is fair. So I would say so. I think you have a very dynamic performance style, like on Run the Burbs, like the Halloween episode. There's sort of like a very silly just like in that moment kind of silliness that feels grounded but sort of big at the same time. So I think you definitely have that capacity, and I think I'm looking forward to seeing that flourish, like you get doing more and being able to explore your range as a performer.
Thank you. You played right into my hand of like fishing for compliments. I thank you so much. Oh my goodness. Well, that's exactly what I needed to get me through the rest of March. I really do appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Well, it was genuine. It was a genuine belief. Like, I mean, I love Run the Burbs, you know, you got me back on board because I sort of fallen behind. When
it's
I was
so
like,
special.
Oh,
Yeah. You can brag about me now. It's perfect.
Yeah, like how have you enjoyed working on that show?
It was brilliant. Like the episodes that I did were my episodes for the season. It's the kindest set that I've ever been on. It, like, everyone is so brilliant. there's no ego whatsoever. Everyone is so kind. Mm-hmm. It's also like diverse on and off the camera. It's like the girls and I, we all hang out. It really is like, I'm so happy to have been able to get that. And to be able to like to do the thing that you said, which is like it's one of those things that I've always wanted to be able to do. It's like give a grounded but big but grounded performance, and they splashed blood on my face, and I got to do a Halloween episode, which is like such a bucket list item. And I got to be in the bubble bay, and it feels unreal, and I just feel privileged to be able to get to do the thing that I love doing, which is performing. It gave me the opportunity to stretch that and get a sense of like what am I able to do. I am on stage, but yeah.
I was lucky enough to meet Ali Hassan he was hosting and the Giller Awards, and I was a runner, so like a nobody, like the people in theater blocks.
We all have to do the running for like really awesome, really big people, and then you like you're nobody, but you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm giving this person their drinks and bring them toilet paper. This is awesome.
He's just a really nice guy. So I mean, Andrew Fung, like I watched Run the Burbs, and like, yeah, if I was a dad, I'd totally be that dad. And he seems like a really awesome, sweet guy.
He so is. Andrew Fung is like has my entire heart, like 100%. That's all. Yeah, yeah, he's brilliant. But yeah, how? Like, I was like that question pertained to me somehow, but I love not answering questions about myself and turning it onto other people. what was like? How? Oh yeah, the intimacy in comedy. Like, it's so interesting because I like to think that I pull my comedy from things that I feel within myself, because I'm a selfish narcissist and I love doing that. But it's also like it's relatable because I there are certain emotions that I enjoy relating to. Like I like talking about, and maybe it's my theater background. Like I love talking about being queer and Muslim, even though my mom will always tell me not to do it, because just like, you know, like those are two communities that don't really always get to mesh, just because of, you know, like religious reasons. And I think that being like talking about it period is already something that is vulnerable, and I just have to remind myself not to be afraid of being vulnerable in that way, and that brings people in, I think. And then you can subvert that and be like, yeah, like you know, my Islamic guilt and my halal bones sort of thing, and and like working with it in that way. And yeah, I think that I get that from being able to tie in multiple emotions into a scene or into a play, like the play that I did in Edinburgh, where it was like a mix of humor and like hardship. And I talked about like my ancestors and their history with being enslaved by the British in Guyana, but then also being...
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Able to like dance around in a sari and yell shit and fall on the ground trying to tap dance in a sari, which I cannot do because I'm not a dancer.
Hopefully one day you'll bring your fringe show to your Edinburgh fringe show to Toronto.
It's my goal. I would love to do it in Toronto. I think it would hit with a Toronto audience too, because there are a lot of Chinese people in Toronto and a lot of people who are wrestling with the same thing that I am, which is like, how do we fit within like the South Asian diaspora? Like what can we call ourselves? Right. It's what can Indian look like? Can it look Caribbean? And that's it for that show. Is me wearing a sari and dancing around, is that cultural appropriation? Like that's a question.
Yeah. It's like I went to Edinburgh for a vacation years ago.
How did you like it?
It was interesting.
What time of year did you go?
I went late spring. So it was it got, I mean, in Scotland, it doesn't ever really get very hot, but it was pleasant temperature. And it's funny because we started in London, stayed in Camden, which is like the counterculture heart of London. And I loved it because it felt kind of like staying in Kensington Market back in the 90s. Then we went to Edinburgh and I felt unsafe the entire time because like,
why?
In this weird way of like, there's plans. There are just too many bankers and lawyers. Like if you go during Fringe, it's like a very different culture because you've got all these artists from around the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But in off season, it's bankers and lawyers and politicians.
I never realized that. I was like, I'm a young, short, brown, like female, like person, and I felt like completely safe. Like, yeah. I'm surprised. Yeah,
it's funny because then I went to Glasgow, which is working class and multi ethnic, and I feel like I'm back at home because Toronto is literally the most ethnically and culturally diverse city in the world.
100%.
I've gotten to the point where I've lived here more than I've lived anywhere else. Like I've lived in growing up. I didn't live in Toronto. I moved around a lot. But I've become acclimatized to multicultural environments to the point where there's too many white people in a room. I feel uncomfortable because
somebody's
going to make a plan and it's going to be racist or homophobic or something. And it's not going to be good. Like, I don't trust people like me.
I am glad that you were saying that. Because I'm like, well, I'll say that. But then you're like, of course, you're brown. But like, to hear a white person say that is insane. Like, wow. Thank you for sharing that. Makes me feel seen.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, you know, I could live in Glasgow. I could visit Edinburgh. I think that's the thing. And it's funny because like Glasgow is, if you had to equate it, it's more Hamilton than Toronto in that it's a bit more rough and ready. But
yeah, it's a little cool. Like David Tennant always says that like Edinburgh is like the prettier city, but like Glasgow's the cooler city.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And there's more young people. It's more of a nightlife. And I felt like it wasn't as walkable. Like Edinburgh, because I stayed there for a month. So by the end of the month, I was able to just navigate myself all over the place. Whereas Glasgow would take me a bit more time. Because it's just a little bigger and the scale is bigger and all of that.
Yeah, it's a bit more sprawling. It's an industrial city as opposed to the it's funny though, when we stayed in Airbnbs the entire time. The one in Glasgow was very just generic Airbnb, like that Saturday Night Live sketch that they had where it's the two characters just like decorating it with very generic furniture. That's where I met the New Zealander who explained the accent to me.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, but in Glasgow or Edinburgh, excuse me. It's just so Edinburgh because we stayed in this place. It's like, oh, this is cool. These pictures are cool. They've got little taxidermied mice and clothes on the counters and stuff. And it's like right across from a cemetery.
Oh, of course.
And,
Of course.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, we're going to stay in the goth place. And so I'm like, yeah, it's like something from Tim Burton's fantasies.
Yeah, well, Edinburgh is haunted. Like, hands down. Like, it's...
Well, I mean, it gets worse. In that, not so much in hauntedness, but in weirdness. Like, so we go in, and it's like, it's this nice place. There's this big kitchen with, like, a second bed, sort of, like, on a platform, making use of, the ridiculously high ceilings that so many of the buildings there have. And there's like
either
a big
super high or super low. It's like one of those.
Yeah, there's no in between.
Like somebody my height, which like is 4'11" 5" is yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like these were easily like 10-12 foot ceilings, kind of thing. Like ridiculously high. So they had like a platform with a second bed up there that was like above the eating area and like a big drying rack for stuff. But then I like go and lie in the bed and I'm like kind of trip and I'm like, oh, that's weird, and I kicked back the rug by accident, and I sort of like lie in the bed to look up, and I'm like, why are there D rings recessed into the ceiling? And then like over on the bed, the host left a book for us, and it was the Guide to Sensual Bondage.
No.
And I look down and there's two D-rings recessed into the floor as well. That's what I tripped over. And I'm like, oh, we're in her bondage shack. A very posh, cool bondage shack. But I'm like, this is Edinburgh. This is where those lawyers go to get spanked before taking the train back to London.
To wherever. Was the price okay, at least? Was bondage
it was a great price.
Affordable?
And it was
affordable. You know what? There you go.
It was affordable and it was... I have an interesting story and it was a neat view, but it was like, Edinburgh is a weird place. It's a weird place.
You gotta go if you have the ability. It's so different. Yeah. And that doesn't surprise me. It shocks me, but it doesn't surprise me.
And I'm glad I got to go before J.K. Rowling was pure evil. So I got to get the Harry Potter stuff before I was like, I feel guilty.
Before you had to be riddled with guilt while you're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I was like, nope, I'm not going to buy those Slytherin cufflinks. I got to buy Slytherin cufflinks guilt free. Wow. I'll never wear them. I gave them to a small child who is too young to understand the horrors of J.K. Rowling and a fellow Slytherin. But it's like it was cool to be able to see that stuff without feeling horrible. I wouldn't do it now, to be honest, because I don't want to do anything to even vaguely enrich that horrible person. But
But anyways, Rhys Darby.
Rhys Darby. Yeah. These are some tangents that we're getting on. Do you have a favorite bit?
A favorite bit. The robots are huge. I'm a comedian, but I'm a sucker for like ways to tie in the personal. And I really did feel like when he talked about his mom and like grief is grief and calm, you can talk about this, whatever, but like, have you ever had to push through the pain when doing comedy? And
yeah, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it.
Me neither.
Yeah. I was doing improv when my stepdad passed away, and I had a class, and my first class back, we had the scene, and I mean, the improv teacher did not know how to read a class.
Yeah.
We had the scene where we're just supposed to like stare directly into our scene partner's eyes and say something personal. And it was just like, it broke me. I was like just weeping. They were weeping. And it was a very beautiful, intimate moment between myself and my scene partner. Mm-hmm. They were supportive of me. Like this person, she's one of the most wonderful people I have ever met. You know, it was just like, yeah, I don't channel grief well. I kind of channel anger better, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's like I can make use of anger. I can't make use of grief. I don't know how to process it in a way that I can turn it into comedy yet. I mean, one day I'd love to, but I don't think I'm there.
Yeah. And it's like, I wonder, I don't even know how, like, I could channel grief artistically. I have a hard time wanting to do it for comedy because those are so opposite to me. Like those two things. And yeah, like back in 2022, like that's when I was really doing, like, that's when I got into like stand up, and I was like, I was working with Vong Show, and I got like Best of Fresh, which only like so many, like only like 12 people get out of like 70. And it was like a really big opportunity. And then I had a friend pass away. And that was it was out of nowhere. And it was the first time that I had experienced like grief, like other than my grandfather when I was 7, like as an adult. And it was so, like the worst thing I've ever experienced. And that was, I had to do all of like Vong's like rehearsals plus Best of Fresh like a few weeks, like 2 weeks later. And then I was in Second City Conservatory at the time, and then I was doing my rehearsals for those and every weekend plus our final show. And it felt like I wasn't doing comedy necessarily for like my enjoyment anymore. I felt like I was doing it because it was part of my job, but it was also like I had to push through the pain. The weekend that my friend passed, I had a Second City rehearsal on like rehearsal where we present it to an audience, like a small audience of students mostly. And I was like, well, I can't let my group down. And you know what, things are like this are going to happen in the real world. So like, I should learn how to, bad idea. I should not have done it. And then like, it's not the, I haven't done stand up very much since then. I've done a lot of sketch and done a lot of performing, and performing is kind of the reason why like I maybe haven't done as much stand up, but it really changed since then. Then I lost both my grandparents, and I was able to channel that in my play for Edinburgh a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I've had a hard time talking about that a lot. Interesting. Yeah.
It's a different energy. And I think once you can capture that, it can make for some of the best comedy. But it's a journey. You don't just, like, some people have a natural talent for it, but most people, it doesn't come overnight. Like, when my grandmother passed away, she wasn't interred for some time, but I like asked if I could say some things at her funeral. And you know, like her and my stepdad, both, I spoke at their celebrations of life, and both of them were really influential in my sense of humor. And I wanted to honor that. And I was given the blessing of time. I mean, because there is that saying, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy. And it's true. And having that space allowed me to process that and speak to that. Like, I retold a story that, especially in her later years, she would just recount over and over again, because she was an officer. She was one of the few actual officers in the Canadian Armed Forces during the Second World War.
Wow.
And so she had all of the responsibilities of a male officer. So she had to do inspections and stuff. And let's just say she did an inspection of the brig with her MPs trailing behind her as a lieutenant. And the inmates in the brig, as she put it, were standing at attention. But the thing is, the way she handled it, and this was like, so her, she's like, she didn't give them the satisfaction. She just said, dismissed, turned on her heel and walked out, and then started laughing as soon as she got out. Just like, she just, you know, she's just one of those people who's like, don't let them win, because if you don't let them win, then you win, kind of thing. And just embraced the power. So I recounted that because it's such a stupid, silly, gross story, but she loved making people squirm with it.
Yeah.
You know, and then with my stepdad, you know, I didn't sing it because I can't sing. I just sort of quoted the always look on the bright side of life, because he and I connected over Monty Python.
Of course.
That's like, we're very different in many levels, but we respected each other and we bonded over this shared love of a very specific comedy that is, you know, it's weird. Like, he was very conservative in a lot of ways. Like, a good, not a bad conservative. Like, one of those people who's, like, old school conservative. Like,
yeah, like, but, Republican before they were the Republicans, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. So,
like, in
so,
the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, how Carlton was a Republican.
Yeah, exactly. So, while we butted heads on certain topics, he always respected me. Okay. And I respected him because he respected me. You know, I didn't agree with him on certain things, but he never gave me a hard time. Like, he would tease me, but it was always kind of teasing that you give somebody you love, kind of thing. Not the kind of teasing you are. That was not it was never disrespectful. So I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you find the grief and you find the connections, but it's hard. It's so hard, especially with, like, somebody. I mean, like, your grandparents when they passed. I mean, those are indelible relationships that form us. So I mean, yeah, hopefully one day you'll be able to find ways to channel that as well into comedy as well as that. Like, myself, like, pour it into creative writing, kind of thing. That's yeah. Where one day hopefully I'll get there too.
Absolutely. And, like, honestly, like, watching Rhys Darby, watching, like, Alex Edelman, like, it all just makes me really miss it, and, like, yeah, wanting to go back on stage and do stand up like that again. Or even, like, I haven't gotten to do a lot of sketch since the beginning of 2023 because I was preparing for Edinburgh. So I'm like, man, I really do miss my straight comedy stuff and not just, like, tying it in with theater too. Yeah. So I do miss it. Yeah.
Well, there is a show that I go to, an open mic I go to. I mean, I know downtown is a bit of a trek for you, but it's called Sidekick. It's a comic shop and a cafe that has open mics every Friday. And my friend Janice Israeloff, an amazing comedian, runs a sort of booked show. Cool. There once a month. So if you're ever looking for a fun space that's a gentle room, which, you know, open mics often aren't.
Like, I think the only time I ever bombed, like, I will say I'm pretty funny, but the only time.
Yeah, you're very funny.
Thank you. Like, there's one time where, like, it was one of those, it was at Joker's Comedy Club in Richmond Hill, and, like, I was doing my set, yeah, and Matt was laughing the loudest, and I'm like, thank you, I hope that I'm actually that funny. But I really do appreciate it.
I am generous with my laughs, but I am earnest with my laughs. If I don't find somebody funny, I don't laugh.
I appreciate
when I find them funny, I give them my heart.
And you're wearing Joker's your best, what we do in the shadow shirt.
I find Joker's is a funny space.
It's because it's so beautiful, but I'm like, but it's also like, this is because I'm used to doing comedy in, like, a basement. Yeah. You know what I mean? But what are your thoughts?
It feels like an LA comedy club. It feels like, you know, like, yeah, Caroline's or something, like, you know, in Times Square in New York, or like, you know, like big fancy places. But the audience there is so weird, and I think it's because it's not a Toronto audience.
No,
like, and it's amazing. It's still on the TTC, kinda. You still
is
have to take
actually?
You got to take an Uber 20 minutes from the stop, because it's just, like, west. Like, you could do it on public transit, but it's just on the fringes. But I find it's interesting because downtown is such a different type of audience, and that kind of, like, speaks to the different experiences you'll get in different places. And I mean, I've done okay. I've done it a couple of times. It's just too much of a trek for me. And I guess the night that I was going to is now gone. But yeah, I guess there were some local comedians who kind of made it their regular haunt too. So there was some interesting personalities there that I'm like, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. I think many of them would be more comfortable in Yuck Yucks than they would have been in a comedy bar. Let me just put it that way. And if you know the Toronto comedy world, you know what that means.
Yeah,
and it's not disrespectful, but it's just, like, different styles.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lovely space though. And it's weird though with the little restaurant in the back with the hologram chefs.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, that's like, they have to have a side business. And it was like every once in a while, like a group would come out of that and walk past the comedy show just like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, what's happening over here? Yeah. Do you have a favorite space to perform in downtown?
I think it's Comedy Bar, just because, like, I got
Dancing
my start
the Bloor.
On Bloor. On
yeah,
Bloor.
Love, because oh it, my god, I love it. Was my goal to be able to perform on Bloor, and then I got to for Sketchfest with Crunchy yeah. Tigers with Gerald Young. That was like, it was such a, it was a moment for me. I was like, wow.
It's when I felt like a real comedian. Like, I didn't call myself a comedian. I waited for somebody to call me a comedian before I used the title.
Oh, because there's so much. Yeah.
Like, I just like, I don't want to, because there's so many people who like do one open mic and they're like, I'm a comedian. I'm like, no, you're not. You're an open micer.
You got to earn it. You have to earn it. Like, there are certain things that I had to wait for people to tell me. Cause like, for example, like one of my most proudest moments was when Vong was like, you just like have that natural thing where when you get on stage, like you're likable. And I'm like, thank you so much. But you can't say that about yourself. Of course you can't say that about yourself.
No, you can't. Yeah. Because that's just narcissism.
Oh, yeah.
You can, but then you'll run for president and get a spray tan.
They love me. Like,
yeah. a Comedy Bar, I think, is my favorite just because it's such a diverse audience. But also, like, my very first time performing there wasn't actually as a comedian.
Oh, wow.
Because I used to DJ and do writing for a burlesque troupe back.
Wow.
In the early 2000s, when there's that like boom of burlesque, that it was like suddenly, but it was like a weird burlesque group. So the premise was, it's called the Shameless Dames. It's these performers who traveled through time, solving history's problems through the power of burlesque. So like we did, I think the Shakespeare show, where my friend Adam Bailey, wonderful fringe performer, does a lot of great clown baby. Adult baby Cupid, where he's like a grown up Cupid, but he's wearing a diaper and is hilarious. Does relationship advice. So he was Shakespeare. My friend Veronica, who writes for the Beaverton, she was Kit Marlowe. And it was just like all this like Shakespeare in love kind of told through the lens of burlesque. And it was bonkers because it was before the venue was even finished. So the sound booth was basically a soundboard on some crates in the back of the room where the floor wasn't finished. So there was like a trough and it was storming, like thunderstorm outside, and water was running down and through the walls. So there's a pool of water, and I'm running this
basement too, which like,
yeah. So I'm standing over a pool of water with open electronics, like just right there. I'm like, if I die, nobody's going to believe me. Like nobody's going to believe how I died. Died DJing a burlesque show in a basement. So I was like, it's just too unbelievable. It'll never happen.
They'd be like, what else did he think was going to happen?
I mean, but if there's a way to go, that's like an epic way to go kind of thing. But maybe it's what I want on my tombstone now that I think about it.
Yeah, burlesque DJ Matt Ardell. Yes, I did sign up for this.
Died doing what he loved, not looking at women's boobies and feeling uncomfortable.
There we go.
They're all my friends. So I'm like, I can't look at them like this. This is not right. Like these are my friends. Like that's just creepy. And so it's like, but they're on stage doing. It's like this is their. It was just like, I was conflicted. I was a very conflicted young man. I have a love for that place just because it's just been so wonderful.
It's so brilliant. Wonderful. It was one of the places where I was like, once I am there, I feel like I can call myself a Toronto comedian, which is really sweet.
I have to say my favorite bit, so we're getting back to Reese here. We're really all over the place. My favorite bit was actually the last bit because it tied in everything. The aliens bit, because it tied in Mr. Thompson, the crappy PE teacher. Mm-hmm. It tied in like what you mentioned, like his cryptozoology podcast. Yeah. It tied in aliens because he and I what I appreciate about him is he earnestly believes, but he realizes how silly it is, and he just like runs with the silliness.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. That's like, okay, I'm with you.
He like he believes in UFOs, but he like he knows that it's silly. But I'm like,
yeah. And this it ties in the siren bit. It has him doing voices because he's doing the alien voices. It's just the culmination of every little kernel of that entire like hour and like 9 minutes, because it's like an hour and 9 minutes up till that point, into one penultimate kind of thing, or one
it
ultimate
was his
bit.
Genius. Sorry, yeah, it, for yeah. me that was like the hallmark of his genius. It felt like I'm a big Queen fan, and I think it's Jazz? I think the album is Jazz, which is one of my favorite albums. I'm gonna like search it up right now. But at the end of at least the Apple version, it's like, oh my god, let me just get this right. More of that jazz. And it's like a little kernel of every single song from the album, but it fits together into this one beautiful like composition. And I'm like, that's exactly what this was. And he did it in a way that it told an additional story, and he laid down the seeds and we ate it all up, and
awesome. Well, thank you, Shahara, for sitting with me. If people wanted to find you, you know, your plays, your TV work, your stand-up comedy, where can they look?
That's a good question. The best way is on Instagram. I'm super reachable. At Huck King Falerius. That's my little handle. My profile picture is pink. And you can find me on Twitter if you would like, the Harz Gaz. But Instagram really is the best way. I'm doing a lot of exciting stuff. I'm going to be part of they're going to announce it very, very soon, probably by the time this is out. But I'm going to be part of Tarragon's Young Playwrights Unit.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's a very like slim spot, and I'm so happy. It's the biggest thing, which is great. And of course, please watch Run the Burbs season 3. Oh my God. Please watch 1, 2, and 3, because it is such a brilliant show. And like Andrew Fung, Andrew Landon, Ali Hassan, and one of our DOPs got and Tipper, I think, got a CSA nominations, like Canadian Screen Awards. So that's how you can find me. Thank you for this opportunity, Matt. You're brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Take care, everyone, and catch you soon.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here comedy and showbizmonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.